Hello and welcome to The Big Fight. One of the problems with the 24-hour news cycle is the fact that important stories, really crucially important stories, are sometimes overtaken by those that are urgent. And that's not necessarily the way things should be. So once in a while, we should try and step back a little bit and look at issues, major issues that are potentially of massive national importance. And one of those questions, which is certainly something we should look at, is everything that's been happening with migration. A large number of Indians living in other places. It leads to a flashpoint, and that's the time when all of us sit back and give it attention. Gujarat, not that long ago, we had all of these pictures, people leaving Gujarat because there were incidents of violence and they were fearing more violence. The other time we start thinking about migration is when images like this come up. This is, of course, Maharashtra. M&S and parties like that quite often come out and speak very forcefully about the fact that outsiders shouldn't be allowed in Mumbai, should not be allowed in Maharashtra, and that's when all of us in the news business start turning our attention to that. Or sometimes we talk about migration when images like this start to show up, and this is the Northeast, where obviously the NRC is being discussed. We are worrying about migration from outside and illegal immigration. However, I think it's important to point this out, migration becomes an issue not just in those flashpoint areas. And migration isn't just an issue when there are illegal immigrants coming in from other countries, which then obviously becomes a political hot point with, for example, we've just heard words like termites being used for some of them who come inside. That's obviously an area of concern. But at a broader level, you would be quite astonished to know the number of Indians who are actually living outside the state that they may have been born in. A very high number indeed. And in fact, the sort of migration flows that we are seeing on an annual basis are also very high. Many of them, women who are migrating to a place where a family which they're getting married into, but even otherwise, there's a lot of change that is taking place. A lot of migration also taking place from rural areas to urban areas. And that has its own consequences. That brings up its own flashpoints as urban amenities tend to get drowned under, and that leads to some of the chaos and the dirt and the filth and the garbage and the lack of infrastructure that we start to see. So this is an important question which we need to come back to. What is the status of migration? What can we do to try and control this entire process? And yes, to what extent is this going to become a major flashpoint in the period going forward? And we have an absolutely fantastic panel joining us to take us through all aspects of this particular question. Professor Yugendra Yadav is joining us, President Swaraj India. Manoj Jha joining us, national spokesperson of the RJD. A state, of course, Bihar, which is often at the center of many of the flashpoints that come up around migration. But as Mr. Rajashekaran will tell us, who's joining us from Chennai, it's not just a Bihar issue or a Maharashtra issue or a Northeast issue or a Gujarat issue. These are potential flashpoints that are building up across South India as well. Lalita Kumaramangalam, great to have you with us, Director of India Foundation, member of the BJP, and also looked after, as NCW's really looked at what women are doing, and women become a very important part of the migration story, so we'd really love to get your views on this. Adil Singh Bopara is a Congress spokesperson. Great to have you with us. Suhas Chakma, Director, Rights and Risk Analysis Group, also from the Northeast, can maybe help us shed some light on what's happening out there. And Shahid Siddiqui, editor, Nayi Duniya, can help us amplify a lot of this. And maybe also look a bit at Uttar Pradesh, which is another state which is quite often dragged into this entire migration debate. Yugendra Yadav, just wanted to get you in for starters. What do you make of some of the flashpoints that keep coming up? Yes, Sons of Soil movements in the Northeast, in Maharashtra, recently in Gujarat. Is this something, a trend that you think is only going to continue?
Vikram, let's begin the show by saying one thing unambiguously. What we have witnessed in Gujarat, what we witnessed in Bengaluru about the persons and migrants from Northeast, what we had witnessed in Mumbai a few years ago, and we keep witnessing once in a while, this is simply unacceptable. It is against the constitutional order of India. The Constitution of India gives complete, full liberty to citizens of India to go to any part of the country, to live there, to seek employment. So that's one thing we should not question in the course of this particular debate. And on that, any party, any person, any official or any politician found guilty is violating the law of the land, violating the Constitution of India. Having said this, I think, as you correctly pointed out, the question of migration is not merely about illegal migration or immigration. The significant question, this is a land of migration. There are all kinds of migrations that you mentioned. There are also seasonal migrations, people migrating only for seasonal labor. These are serious issues. And yes, it causes all kinds of upheavals. It causes economic upheaval because people lose jobs. Local people in large parts of the country feel they have been disempowered. Their jobs have been taken away. They have been robbed. So there's an economic anxiety. There is also a cultural anxiety that you have in a place like Bengaluru. People from Karnataka feel, well, is there anything Kannadiga about Bengaluru anymore? These are legitimate anxieties that need to be addressed. So my starting point would be to say constitutional guarantees must be protected, within which the economic anxiety of the local population and the cultural anxiety of the local population must also be addressed.
Okay. Yeah, you've helped us really set this whole thing up. Lalitha Kumar Mangalam, the basic principle of what was just said, any Indian should be free to move to any other part of India, live there, work there, marry there, settle down there. That's the way it should be?
Ideally, yes, that's how it should be.
Why am I sensing a but coming up?
Because I'm going to go against the grain now and probably get criticized for it. Now, if you take numbers, and I don't think there are demographic numbers that show how many men have migrated internally and how many women. A large number of migrants...
70% tend to be women.
Exactly. I was just going to come to it. We have a total of about 130 million internal migrants, out of which if 70% are women, you can do the math. Now, in any given situation, in India, women are at the bottom of the social ladder. And migrants tend to be people who don't make a satisfactory living for themselves wherever they are supposed to come from. It could be Bengal, it could be Jharkhand, it could be anywhere. And the problem is that when people react to the problem of migrants coming into their state, they forget that, for example, my own state of Tamil Nadu, there is Rajshekaran who's going to probably take me on this. Most of the migrants who have come into Tamil Nadu are actually providing cheap labor, which are doing jobs which often the more better educated Tamil Nadu state people don't want to do. For example, in the matchmaking factories, in Sivakasi, the explosive and the, you know, all the Diwali lights, these sort of factories, and especially in the Tirupur and the knitting areas. This is there in Punjab also. However, they often are not assimilated into the culture. The culture of this country, especially if you take states like Tamil Nadu and Maharashtra, are very, very different from the culture of the states where migrants come from. And it's a, you know, it's like it's a very sharp, thin sword with many edges almost, in the sense that people from Maharashtra and Tamil Nadu don't want to accept these people. They employ them. But they really don't want to accept them as part of their own society. They're always kept at a distance. So migrants themselves also, being put through this, don't assimilate into the part of into Tamilian or Maharashtrian society. It's a two-way sword.
Okay. Can I just get Manoj Jha in on that point? So Manoj Jha, when you were listening to what Lalitha Kumar Mangalam was saying, they are resistant to local culture and they're not able to assimilate. Is that a valid criticism in your view?
I'll tell you that the last part of her statement, that is one, that would be my starting point. You know, it seems that we are revisiting the very idea of India. As Yoginji rightly said, that take away the issue of migration, you would have nothing in the idea of India, because as it is said, that aabru de ganga wo din hai yaad tujhko utra tere kinare jab karwa hamara. So every karwa has enriched India. Having said that, I have no doubt in saying that there are anxieties, there are fear. I mean, the fear and anxiety has been distributed in abundance in my country. As a result of which, what I feel very strongly, that there is a very thin line between nativism and xenophobia. And as a result of which, what happens, the neighbors become strangers. It's a worrisome aspect when Ryogenji said, under Article 19, Clause 1, Subclause D, you are free to move from one place to another. And one must not forget, I tell you very frankly, when the Gujarat incident happened, we were unambiguous in saying that whosoever is responsible for that barbaric act should be punished. But then an entire area should not be targeted for that. Then the entire worldview gets very different. What worries me that people, when they talk about migration, people from Bihar and UP migrating to other area, not accepting the culture or resisting to the culture, they forget the fact that Bihar has traditionally been victim of the kind of development chosen by the successive Indian government since 1947. There are evidences galore why it happened, as a result of which what happens, that you would find Bihari migrants at the lower rung almost in every city. Now, take them out. Imagine what shall be the GDP of that particular area. Now,
That point is well taken. But do you accept Lalitha Kumar Mangalam's point about they should make efforts to try and assimilate and integrate with the local populations, or no? This is, by the way, we're talking about this internally in a country
Bikram,
like India.
Bikram,
this is the
Bikram,
core of the immigration debate around
Bikram,
the world.
30 seconds. Bikram, 30 seconds. My idea of India and an entire issue of migration is I would like to see India in every state as a salad bowl. I would not understand assimilation as something like sugar going into water and making a sherbet. I would rather love a salad bowl where every element is very different.
Okay.
Maintaining the identity. This is what India is all about. Don't kill it.
That's an absolutely fair way of looking at it. Look at India as a patchwork quilt. Look at every state as a patchwork quilt. Don't ask for assimilation and say, oh, we must all be exactly the same, because that's the whole wonder of India is, you know, so many different people of different types living out here. Why must you insist on assimilation? Mr. Vicharajshekaran, let me get you in. Two different thoughts have come in from Lalitha Kumaramangalam and also from Mr. Jha. What do you feel?
See, Vikram, I'm taking a different opinion of whole debate of these migrants, because the main root cause for these migrants is unemployment, poverty. See, politicians, during the general elections, they make false promises. They say, we'll give you that, give you this. And I'm not trying to prove a point that I'm not blaming somebody, one party or the other. But as admitted by Mr. Nitin Gadkari, the union minister, he said, during elections, we tell lies. So trusting that we vote the migrants, even in Northeast, Maharashtra, Gujarat, everywhere, people vote believing the words of the politicians, and nothing is happening. After that, they immediately go to a state where it is going to flourish, where they are going to get job. It is purely on poverty and unemployment, because a new state has been formed, Telangana and Andhra. You have a lot of job avenues and opportunities. So they go there, and likewise in Tamil Nadu.
But what's wrong with that? I'm just trying to understand what's wrong with that. Obviously, people will go to a place where there are more jobs. They will go and seek out employment opportunities. There's not necessarily anything wrong with that.
The crime rate also equally increases because of the migrants.
I don't think that's
That's what Donald Trump said in America.
I don't think that's fair, Victor.
That's almost exactly what Donald Trump said.
Let me
made fun of Donald Trump when he said it.
Yes. Let me be absolutely blunt here. One of the complaints of people in Tamil Nadu is that people from the north never come to and learn Tamil. It's the other way around. Tamilians come and we end up learning Hindi. Now, this has been the basis of the Dravidian movement, but that's the politics of it.
But hang on. Can I just take that on? I agree with that point.
I'm not a Tamil linguistic
person. But I agree with the board principle of that. But having said that, when you have 600 million Hindi speakers and what is it, 60 or 70 million Tamil speakers.
That's just why I'm saying that I don't believe in that. But the fact is that most migrants either find it very difficult to or do not want to assimilate with the local population, which creates more problem for them in turn.
Okay, hang on. Before I say, let me just get you on this. The Northeast. Let's look at the Northeast. And I just want to ask you one question on the Northeast, which is, it's interesting because people from the Northeast have a constant complaint when they are going to other parts of the country and saying we're not being fully accepted. And that's a very valid complaint. And we've done, I don't know how many shows we've done just on the big fight when people from the Northeast are being discriminated about against in places like Delhi or Bengaluru or wherever else there is. But sometimes people from the Northeast are also not accepting when people from other parts of the country come in there and they're saying they are swamping our indigenous culture.
I think Northeast is the most ethnocentric
place where people have not accepted the idea of diversity and plurality, and they have not gone through the entire process, and it's almost ethnocentric tribalism you find. So, for example, if you go to a place like Mizoram, they will say Chakmas do not belong here. So the people in the Northeast, I mean, they actually do not accept any plurality. Sometimes they do not even accept plurality within their own ethnic communities. If you go to Nagaland, you will find that the Nagas denying tribal status to the Nagas who had come from actually neighboring Manipur prior to the creation of Nagaland in 1963. I think the point which I wanted to make is that human migration is as old as the human civilization. And we are talking about the global village. And in a global village, you cannot talk about assimilation. Assimilation as a concept has been rejected everywhere, anywhere in the world. And that's what the Canadians and the Australians tried to do by kidnapping the children of the Aborigines and trying to make them the white men. That has been rejected. So wherever the migrants go, they have every right to preserve their cultural identity. I think what we need to do in the world is to preserve the beauty of the diversity of the world and not to make McDonald's kind of a thing. Unless you do that, obviously you will not find solution. The problem is not with the migration. The problem is with the inability of the political parties to recognize the fact that this kind of anti-migrants agitations, actions, are actually a serious threat to national security. We are a country, we still do not have a law which deals with racial discrimination. We believe that there are no racial discrimination, despite that we are so different.
Yeah.
Because the Northeastern will discriminate against the others, others will again discriminate against others. Unless we have a holistic approach to it, how are you going to resolve it?
Adil, let me turn to you next. What do you feel? You've heard lots of very divergent views on this.
Well, let me preface by saying that, you know, our strength lies in our diversity. And any attempt to tinker that defeats the idea of India. Let's be very clear with this. I come from Punjab. And let me tell Mr. Jha that migrants from UP and Bihar are an asset for us. If today Punjab is the food bowl, I think a great share of credit goes to the migrants from these two states.
But does everybody in Punjab believe that?
I think so. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a necessity. They're indispensable.
Lalita is shaking her head.
Well, we disagree with the BJP fundamentally, so I'm not surprised. But the point here is they are an asset to us and we recognize that.
Please,
but you have to understand, Vikramji, you have to understand, with the BJP, it's hate, it's divisiveness and it's parochialism. And let me back it up with data. When Mr. Modi was the chief minister in Gujarat, there were Sikh farmers who were settled for decades in the district of Kutch. Their lands were forfeited. I was involved with that case, so I can tell you, the collector issued a circular and said that since your ancestors were not domiciled from Gujarat, therefore your land is going to be forfeited. This happened under the BJP. There have been instances in BJP-ruled states, Meghalaya is one example. Amit Shah goes from one state to the other, and in the name of NRC, is creating this narrative of hate and xenophobia.
But I would say...
Can I complete, please? With your permission, please. So the point here
That's
is they're creating...
That's the politest I've ever heard anybody being on a show in a long, long time. But okay, fine. With his, wait, no, now that he's given you
his
permission, finish
what
you
were
saying.
The problem is the BJP is trying to create a climate of hate. When they fail to create jobs, you have to channelize that anger. And that anger is being channelized towards the migrants. It is us versus them, and it essentially flows out of lack of economic opportunity.
Okay, I have to give it a chance to answer this. His point is, you've been unable to create jobs, so you're deliberately just creating anti-migrant xenophobia as a way to divert it. We can't create jobs, we're going to say the migrants are coming and stealing
jobs. Channelizing their anger.
Listen, I'm not here to give an election speech, so I'm not about to launch into hate Congress mode. Let me make that absolutely clear. This is not a question of party or race or gender or religion. It may come down to caste. People will say a lot of things. The basic fact is that we do have freedom of movement in this country. Mobility is allowed. The problems that are arising are not merely due to unemployment. It's also due to a sort of bias against several things that Indians have. For example, color. For example, the way the Northeasterners look. I know I've dealt with many problems when I was chairman of NCW. So it's not just about politics.
But you're just saying that the same thing happens even like between Tamil Nadu and people from Uttar Pradesh going to Tamil Nadu or vice versa.
And not that I personally agree with it, but I'm laying facts before you. To politicize everything just does away with the issue of it. I used to keep saying this about women's safety. The moment you say BJP versus Congress versus JDU versus whatever, 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 the women's safety is forgotten. We are all fighting about votes and about other things.
Okay.
This is not about that.
Okay, let me just get Shahid in, then I'll come back to you, sir. Yeah, Shahid.
Look, I look at the problem in the holistic way. Because this, as he said, this has always been there, this is, you know, civilizational issue. But migration. it's also migration.
Yes.
And it's also about modernization. It's also about urbanization. It's about building a nation. India is a nation in the making. And we are now gradually, and communication has increased. It's become easier to move from one place to another. It was not easy in the past for a person from Northeast to go to work in Tamil Nadu. With new kind of jobs coming in, with new kinds of development taking place, we are not really focusing on migration as a positive asset. And therefore, we must do that. We take it only as a problem. It should not be taken as a problem. It should be taken as asset. For example, as in Punjab, the kiln workers from Uttar Pradesh, if they do not go to Punjab, if the farm labor doesn't go from Bihar and Uttar Pradesh, then Punjab as a grain ball will collapse.
Okay. And use it as an asset.
Let me just finish. Now, this we must accept, but at the same time, we have to be extremely careful about this. You know, with democracy, lot of regionalism has emerged, lot of regional, you know, language, you know, biases have emerged, and this have to be met very, very, in a very focused way.
Will that ever be met very firmly is a moot point, because... So, Chakmanamin, let's get you back. You were trying to say something, and then,
No, I think I just wanted to make a request. It's not a political issue. I'm not defending BJP. What I'm saying is, if you look at the Congress policy in Mizoram, I mean, Congress is possibly the most communal political party there, which enacted the law dividing the scheduled tribes into two categories, Jos, which is the Mizos, and the non-Jos, and non-Jos are not given any rights, even if you top in the state examination. So what I'm saying is, you know, political parties on an issue as this have to arise above their narrow, what's the mindset.
Can I just come in for 30 seconds? You know, the point is, this is all in the abstract. Let's apply what's happening on the ground today. When Amit Shah goes to Rajasthan and says that, you know, there are 100 crore infiltrators, what's the message which you're sending to your cadres?
Can you have the patience to listen, sir? That's perfect. And the other party president...
Are you seeking a BJP ticket?
No, I am not.
No, come
the
on.
The point is...
I have been going so many times.
This rhetoric is leading to violence. This rhetoric is leading to
two wrongs do not make one correct.
And this is the reality. Amit Shah goes from state to state and is creating a climate of fear.
Yogendra Yadav, let me just get you back into this. Look, it's an election year. And let's face it, it's nothing new, not even something particularly true here in India. Donald Trump won the last election by talking about immigration, right? We may expect immigration, and let's talk about people coming from outside, to be a potentially a hot button item in the build-up to 2019. But it's happened all through human history that one of the easiest ways to divert the attention of people from whatever problems they may be facing and to get people to come together at a political time is to point a finger at the other. And that's why the question of migration will always be relevant, not necessarily from outside. But when you're fighting elections in Tamil Nadu, oh yeah, look at all these people coming from outside and they're creating problems. Look at what the MNS does in Maharashtra.
Shiv Sena, the MNS, they all build it up.
So are we going to see, Yogendra Yadav, a wave of this now for the next 1 year?
I'm afraid, Vikram, we are going to witness one version of it, and that's very dangerous. As I've said earlier, migration is a complex thing. There are two sides to it. When rich migrants come in, they pose a threat. When very poor migrants come in, they are threatened. But what we are witnessing right now in the country, especially in the wake of Mr. Amit Shah's statements, is not the complexity of migration that India has faced, will always face. What we are witnessing is quite a determined political propaganda being unleashed, which is actually simply a pretext for an attempt to create Hindu-Muslim rift. When Mr. Amit Shah goes to Rajasthan and talks about Bangladeshi termites, Now, you know, I mean, Rajasthan, there can be other states which have a problem of Bangladeshi immigrants. Rajasthan is not one of them. I mean, you can count the number of Bangladeshis that you would get in Rajasthan. Why does he talk about that in Rajasthan, in Delhi? He does it because Bangladeshi is merely a pretext to talk about something else. It is to conflate a Hindu-Muslim conflict. And I'm afraid, and that's something I've been saying, in the next few months, you would either see Kisan and Jawan, or you would see here Hindu and Musliman. Because Kisan and Jawan question threaten the BJP, it is now trying to play this election on the issue of Hindu-Musliman. And this rhetoric about the Bangladeshis is not about Bangladesh, because the same government's people come and tell Bangladesh Prime Minister, don't worry, we are not interested in you, we know we can't send them back, don't even worry about it, this is a non-issue. And then they come back home and say, okay, crores of Bangladeshi termites. Now, this is nothing but sheer attempt to derail this particular general election because the BJP feels threatened.
Shahid Siddiqui, just wanted to get you in on that. Would you agree with that? So is it polarization through another route?
You know, Mr. Amit Shah is talking of 100 crore, you know, ghuspetiye. So what are 100 crores in a nation of 125 crores? What are you talking about? So you are creating fear. They are trying to play on this fear of the migrant. And there, in Gujarat, they did it when they talked of Mia Musharraf. Mia, the Mia was used for Musliman. So they said, Mia ko nikalna hai, Mia Musharraf se ladna hai. So they were not going to fight Mia Musharraf in Pakistan. They were talking of Mia Musharraf in Juhupura or in one of the mohallas of Ahmedabad. And that's what, okay, I agree with him. That's what the kind of fear and that kind of divide they are trying to create.
Lalita Kumar Mangla, let me just get you in on this. Is all of this polarization through the back door, some of the rhetoric?
No, it isn't. You will remember, I hope, everybody, that this latest, whatever was stirred up in Gujarat, was because allegedly a laborer from Bihar raped a little child, and there was a huge furore locally, etc. It had nothing to do with Mia Musharraf or any other Mias. I'm sorry if my accent is a bit
talking
wrong.
Of 2002,
Now. But we are not talking about 2002. Sorry, the fact is that we are in election year, and the BJP is trying to come back to power like every other respectable national party would, and therefore, yes, everybody is also in anti-BJP mode. Now, like I said, I do not want to digress into election politics at this moment. I have seen this happen over and over and over again with women's issues. Okay. There is an election year going on. It's going to be a very bitterly fought election. It's going to get more and more bitter. But I do not want to bring that bitterness into this argument, because we are talking about migrants from all over India to all over India.
Okay. Let me therefore get back to some of the broader issues also. Let's also not make all discussion, all debates only about Hindu-Muslim issues. So, Professor Manoj Jha, I mean, yes, in the incidents which we just saw in Gujarat or some of what's been happening with in Maharashtra, for example, it's not really been Hindu-Muslim as much as it has been about, you know, North Indians and people from Uttar Pradesh and Bihar. Your point, Manoj Jha, on what was just referred very briefly by Mr. Rajshekaran a short while back, migrants can sometimes bring crime with them. That's one charge which is made. And what is made sometimes in Maharashtra and Mumbai is migrants are overwhelming our infrastructure. Even in a city like Delhi, you sometimes hear it often being repeated. So many migrants are coming. That's the reason why urban infrastructure can't keep up.
I'll tell you, Vikram, frankly, I don't agree. You know, something strange has happened to my country. Every evening, we need to have an other. I mean, look at our television debates, look at our discussion, this process of othering and having another. So for patriotism, we have a Pakistan. For our own anxiety, dealing with our own anxiety, somebody from Bihar could be a situation, could be a target, or from Tamil Nadu in Maharashtra, because Shiv Sena started with that. There is a very nice book written by Deepankar Ji, Nativism in a Metropolis, that is a story about Shiv Sena. But what I found very bizarre, very, very bizarre, Vikram Ji, that somebody said crime rate. Oh my God. I think in 1960s, there was a theory called, in criminology, Lombroso. Now we thought we are past it. What kind of argument is this? Migrants, they arrive and crime rate goes up. Believe me, it was very difficult for us, but we made sure that in Bihar, it does not turn into Gujarat versus Bihar kind of thing. That has to be a stop. But then what do we do with the politics? And I'm saying this on record. My home minister never uses ghuspaitiya. In the house, I had asked a question. He never said Ghuspaitia. The NRC coordinator never uses the word Ghuspaitia. But the largest leader of the biggest political party, he talks about Ghuspaitia every now and then. So what happens under the rubric of Ghuspaitia? Every community looks for a Ghuspaitia. So a Bihari becomes a Ghuspaitia in Gujarat. So a Tamilian becomes a Ghuspaitia in 1960s in Maharashtra. I'm worried about the very, very idea which we thought we are making in India, which is different people, different communities, different religion, different state, and we shall arrive at something called a lovable idea of India. We are losing that.
Okay.
We are losing that.
Mr. Raj Shekaran, let me just turn to him, because you said that sometimes the migrants do bring with them problems of crime. We heard what Professor Jha said, and he's right. Actually, the same things which you are sometimes talking about right now was exactly what the Shiv Sena used to say about people from Tamil Nadu coming to Mumbai and Maharashtra in the 60s and 70s, and many in Tamil Nadu would object very, very strongly to that.
Bank robbery, murder, murder for gain, and all these IT sectors are being attacked by the migrants. So as far as Tamilians outside Tamil Nadu, they are very religious, always here, even in Tamil Nadu. They are law-abiding citizens, going by their past record I'm speaking. And by the way, I just want to highlight one point. See, BJP, what BJP is doing...
Can I just interrupt you in full flow? Mr. Raj Shekaran, I'm just trying to interrupt you in full flow. Aren't you overstating it a little bit? Mr. Raj Shekaran, aren't you overstating it a little bit that people in Tamil Nadu are the only people who are God-fearing and law-abiding?
Tirupur factories wouldn't run if we didn't have the girls and the boys coming in from the north of India to work. I don't think that's fair. I'm from Tamil Nadu. I don't agree with what you said. It's not fair to judge somebody by the color of their skin or the way they look, etc. Migrants have their problems, but it's unfair to say that all crime is because of migrants. If you say it's because of poverty, because of deprivation,
majority, all of that is a different thing.
But not Bihari and UP and Gujarati.
I just see, Mr. Raj Shekaran, drawing blanket assertions is wrong. It would be as wrong for somebody to have said because some of the largest scams in UPA, one were done from political parties belonging to Tamil Nadu, that therefore, you know, all large-scale corruption and scam is a Tamil Nadu issue.
I'm not saying that the only because of the migrants, the offence or crime rate is increased. It is the majority crime rate. Offences done by the migrants.
I think we need to get the statistics.
I'm trying to emphasize here.
That's absolutely wrong.
In Gujarat, so many rapes have been committed.
Now, one rape where a migrant is involved, then they say all migrants are responsible. This happens everywhere with a minority. Migrants are a minority everywhere. And if they commit a crime, then the whole community is put into
the
lock. And
BJP
that's what we are doing. This is extremely dangerous for the nation and for any kind of development in the country.
So in Tamil Nadu, so what do you say for that? It is purely polarization of votes. They are doing it for polarization of votes. They are targeting the Muslims and Christians in Tamil Nadu. For what?
Yogendra Yadav targeting non-Tamilians. Yogendra Yadav. The basic thing that we just heard from Mr. Raj Shekaran, and this is something which often lies at the heart of a lot of the anti-migrant sentiments. Is this what we've just heard? You know, they are bringing crime in with them. We are law-abiding. We are God-fearing. They are the ones who are responsible for the problems that are happening in our society. Is there any data to support this? Do migrants bring more crime with them?
I'm frankly very surprised to hear that, Vikram, actually, and I'm surprised that on a national television someone can say these kinds of things. This is utterly, utterly uninformed prejudice, nothing else. And I want to remind the gentleman, I'm sorry, I don't know him very well, that there are Tamil migrant workers all over this country, including in the city of Delhi. And please remember that ordinary people hold similar prejudice vis-a-vis them as well. So I would have expected you, coming from a state which has migrant workers from in different parts of the country, to actually defend the rights of those migrants. And the kinds of things you spoke about, these outsiders have come, they do crime, they do these things. This is a very standard stereotype about migrants that you see all over the world, all over India. And I would be very curious to see the statistics that you talk about, that majority of crime in Tamil Nadu is being committed by migrants. I mean, this would be astonishing. This should be the front page headline of every newspaper if this were to be true.
All right, Mr. Rajshekaran. I'm giving you the right to reply to that. Does that data really exist?
I have to check with the Tamil Nadu Police Crime Record Bureau. And I have to give you the data. I'm not having it now.
Check with the National Crime Records Bureau, which brings out the Crime in India report, and you will find that the crime rates have
increased. Okay, one at a time. Let's give him a chance to reply.
Majority offence are committed by the migrants.
That's what we are disputing. There's no statistics to back what you have just said.
That is a harsh truth. Please understand. I'm not having it up front. We have to get it from the police department, which says so.
Till we get that data, let's not repeat those charges. Let's not use that data. Let's not refer to it.
I'm saying whatever the newspapers have reported. Maximum offense of big crimes,
newspapers?
Bank robbery, all the newspapers.
All right.
If you go with the past track
fine.
Record of this Tamil Nadu police records, you can understand that.
Okay. We will park that particular allegation with an asterisk on it until we can get that verified by data, which right now, at least a majority of the people on this panel almost unanimously feel does not exist. So therefore, till that comes up, we will park that particular allegation. Right.
It's an old trick of the demagogues, and not just in India, world over. When they flounder in their primary task, they create another, they create an enemy, and they channelize that anger. And the purpose behind this is to divert attention from the country's failures. Now, when does this happen? It's fertile ground when you fail to deliver on jobs. Mr. Modi promised 2 crore jobs. Gujarat was severely hit by demonetization and GST. His government is not able to create those jobs, so therefore, what do? You say, a BJP MLA from Himmatnagar says, we are going to shut down factories which employ outsiders. So this is the narrative. Okay. But lastly, let me tell you something. BJP started with religion.
It comes down to the migrant workers committing crimes, and for you, eventually everything becomes down to Mr. Modi, not
religion. That's the reality.
To talk about.
He is what ails India today. BJP is not going to stop
religion.
Did you
just say Modi is what India is today?
The ideology is what ails India.
Did you just?
The ideology, Mr. Modi and Amit Shah's ideology is what ails India. I'm very clear on this. The Congress party is clear on this.
No.
It started with religion. It's going to go to caste. It's going to go to language. And now it's
I'm going to give you a chance to... Are you trying to say that the ideology of Mr. Modi is what India is?
No, not at all. It's antithetical. Mr. Modi, let me...
I'm giving him a chance to clarify.
Mr. Modi and Amit Shah's ideology represents hate, bigotry.
You just said it represents...
No, I didn't say that. No, you didn't hear me properly.
I just wanted to say from the Northeast perspective... Much before the political parties came, when the Assam agitation started in 1979 against the foreigners, it was not against the Muslim. When the Nelly massacre took place, where 700 people were killed one day, then it was not the Hindus who were involved, it was the tribal communities who were involved. So these outsiders and insiders, you know, it has been taking place much before any of the political parties have come or made this as an issue. And if we even look at today's NRC, it's a creation of all the political parties who are in power.
So this is, I think that's an interesting point and something for us to keep in mind. There are lots of problems that are created by political parties. Political parties create some problems for the sake of votes. There are some fissures which already exist, which, yes, political parties may take advantage of, but you can't, but those are fissures. And they, some of these fissures have actually, the fear of the outsider, or the desire to drive out the outsider or blame the outsider for all your problems, that perhaps has been there all through human civilization. And let me just turn to the audience and say, yeah, you're all here in Delhi. How many of you from outside Delhi? No, see, I'm just kidding. Okay, the gentleman there.
My question is actually to understand the paradox that exists in a constitution in the country. So according to Article 16, subclause 2, it says that clause 2 says that there cannot be any discrimination on the basis of residence, place of birth, and hence are the many other facts. But if you see, particularly in Northeast, first of all, I disagree with Chakma, sir, because when half of the diversity is in the Northeast, if there is no acceptance, then there will be only civil war going on in the country. Secondly, when there is so much of disparity in development, access to education is not there, or for example, there is no proper penetration of education and quality education, should there not be any barrier kept for things like government jobs, where actually people from there can be taken out and then we can stop outsiders to actually get this job?
Where are you going to draw the line on that? I mean, then you're going to say universities, Delhi University should have a quota for Delhi people, don't allow people from
outside. I'm asking whether that can be done or not.
Okay, well, let me get some more viewpoints.
There's quite a bit of blame game that always starts when we're talking about any issue in India. But what we're actually missing out on is that when we legitimize migration anywhere in the world, not just internal migration, but internationally as well, so it's kind of, there are new problems that arise out of it. So we are not talking about who is committing the crime. So if there are people who are going to move some other place, so there will be competition for resources, obviously. There are some people who are going to lose out on the resources, and people are definitely going to get into something else. So crime rate is going to increase. Problems like brain drain are going to increase. When people are not going to get the jobs, they're going to run for somewhere else. And then we are going to talk about problems like brain drain. But again, the root problem that is existing in the domestic country.
Okay.
So the focus never
Let's get another viewpoint in the lady here.
Hello. So basically, we were talking about the culture as well. And as he said, we all want that there should be a bowl of salad, right? There should be a salad bowl. But who will act as a salt? Because we have seen that the people are culturally intolerant. So who will act that people do not do or commit the atrocities?
Okay, so I just want to get a quick final word from all of you. At the end of the day, if you're looking at some, and I haven't even got into rural-urban migration, maybe that's something which we should park for a separate episode of The Big Fight. If we are to manage this process going forward, migration, is it only going to increase? Is it going to decrease? What are the issues
it's
we need to keep
to
in mind?
Because there's a global migration. So many Indians are migrating to Dubai or to America or to Europe. All over the world, that migration will come because we are talking of a global village. And if we believe in that, then it will happen. And if we believe in India as a nation, it will happen. Therefore, we must have a positive policy for migration. We must have maybe a ministry which can look after migration within the country. If we have a ministry for migrants from outside who are migrating to other countries, we should have a ministry here which can see to the problems they are facing or to see that how much they can assimilate.
So, Chakma, final word from you.
The existing legal framework is not framed or equipped to deal with the kind of crimes that takes place against migrants. And unless we develop the legal system, people will not realize that it's an offense to commit such kind of an act. I think the moment you start or bring such a law, the fear of the law will be created because people will take recourse of the law. So the biggest problem at the moment is that we are not having a comprehensive law which deals with this kind of hate speech, and the current legal regime dealing with hate speech is not enough.
All right. Mr. Rajshekaran, final thoughts from you.
We have the right to go throughout this country. Even I can go and live in Delhi and Bombay, everywhere. But we should ensure we follow the rule of the state. We should ensure we are Indian citizens everywhere. We should be allowed to live a peaceful life wherever we are. We should not create issues and problems and involve in any kind of issues which is going to divide the society and the community where we are going to live. That is my only wish and prayer.
All right. Fair enough, Mr. Rajshekaran. Let me get a quick word in now from Professor Manoj Jha.
I must put it on record that amalgamation of fear and anxiety produces anger. And there is no dearth of anger in my times, in the times we are living in. And anger always needs a target. We should all be a little careful. Secondly, I believe that it's a post-truth times as well. One of your reporters from your channel met the then fringe, now the CM of a particular state, and told him that your idea about distribution of electricity, the facts speak otherwise. He said it very categorically. Facts se kya cheez hota hai? Perception bhi koi cheez hoti hai. So these are the times when facts has to take a back seat vis-a-vis perception. Let's hope we enter better times soon.
All right. Yogendra Yadav, last word from you.
We are a country of migrants, have always been so, and are likely to be even more so in future. Therefore, our constitution provides two principles to balance it. One, that you can go freedom of travel, freedom of occupation, freedom to reside anywhere. Two, specific exceptions to cater to the anxieties of local communities, Article 371 and so on and so forth. Strangely, after 70 years, we need to strengthen both these boundaries. On the one hand, the migrants need better protection of law, especially poor migrants going to different parts of the country. Secondly, at the same time, locals who are in disadvantageous conditions because of migration, poor locals, need better protection, not from law, but in terms of educational opportunities, employment opportunities, and cultural questions. We need a much better social policy.
Okay, Adil.
The problem is not paucity of a legal architecture. The problem is when the ruling party's ideology feeds this narrative. This is the crux of the issue. Let's understand migration is a reality and it is an asset. We must welcome this because this is how the economy functions.
But yeah, the migration issues have not just come with this ruling party. I mean, the migration issues have been around, as I said, for centuries, millennia.
Why is it that it's more common in BJP ruled states?
No, the Nelly massacre was not, those were different reasons.
I think you can't mix them up. Yeah. The problem today is when you when you fail on the economic front, when you fail on the economic front, you whip up this kind of hysteria.
Nelly is very complex.
You whip up this obnoxious hysteria.
My point is, this is the only time you've had anti-migration sentiments, right?
We've had anti-migration sentiments all over the world for, as you pointed out.
Let him finish.
It is.
He's entitled to his final view. So just, yeah, quick.
When you fail on your economic agenda, you whip up this kind of xenophobia and hate. And this is what India, unfortunately, has to confront today. It started with religion. Now it's come down to region. It's parochialism at its worst.
Okay.
Migration problems have been there in all countries for a very, very long time. I agree that we should not, we shouldn't really put all migrants in one box. But a certain amount of assimilation is best advised. You don't need to necessarily lose your culture. You know, North-South is about language, about many things, food, etc. Often they are exacerbated by people from outside the migrant community. I agree to that. But as a rule, Indians are very judgmental. We need to, as a country, stop judging each other so much on language, on food, on fair or dark or yellow or pink or whatever it is, or the way your eyes are, etc., etc. There are lots of subjects in the concurrent list, which means the states have control over it. Reservation of jobs came up. It's very difficult to say that you reserve jobs only for locals, like Vikram said. What do you do in Delhi? Delhi is really a city of migrants. I'm not from here originally, though I grew up here. My own classmates from school tell me that, how did you learn such good Hindi? It's not very flattering to me in some ways. But yes, you must learn certain things of local customs, languages, etc. You don't have to lose your other identity, which you may be from Assam or Punjab or anywhere else.
Okay.
As we move ahead in the world, migration is going to be a certainty. We need to deal with it all sitting down together, not saying tutu mai mai all the time. That does not work. Regardless of which party may be in power in a state or a country.
Can write Amit Shah's speeches. I think it'll be a better India.
Okay.
He's trying to make trouble.
Yeah. All right, fine. We'll get her to write some of those speeches. That's it for this episode of The Big Fight. Ended in a certain amount of unanimity as to the fact that, yes, migration is a statement, a fact that is going to continue. We're going to continue to, as more and more transportation happens, as the world becomes a smaller place, certainly we as a country are going to be far more mobile in one form or the other than we ever have been. We better figure out how to solve some of the broader questions around migration so that it doesn't become a constant flashpoint. You're watching The Big Fight. We'll be back next week.